On Monday, August 8th, Tall Can Audio hits 1,000 episodes.
Wait, that's still on? Who could possibly still care?
And the gang is all here to celebrate.
It's euphoric. It's got to be close to nirvana. It's outstanding.
For the first time ever, Maddie, Michaela, Rob, and Matt are all live in studio together.
It's happening, you guys! It's happening! Oh, my God, guys! Oh, my God! I wish you all were here!
Is this likely to go well?
Just check my notes here. No!
At least it will make a lot of noise.
Boom. Here comes the boom.
1,000 pods and 1,000 pints.
I don't think I've ever been as proud in my entire life.
TCA 1000 drops Monday, August 8th, wherever you find low-quality podcasts.
Fuck, it's out of control. Shit.
Like one third more sports than a normal can.
Welcome to Tall Can Sports, episode 2. We're back after what was a pretty successful launch weekend, actually. There was a couple of hiccups on the technical side, but all the shows were pretty well received. So why change up too much? We thought we'd bring back the guy we had from episode 1, Nate Sager from Yahoo Sports is back again. How's it going?
Good. I'm just thinking of like Barney on The Simpsons. They found me on the men's room floor.
He's been here since the last one. So I think the main focus of this one was initially scheduled to be and is going to be a preview of the Memorial Cup, which starts this coming weekend. But just as we sat down to record this, a bit of pretty good size hockey news broke in that the Toronto Maple Leafs had signed Mike Babcock. We touched on that a little bit last week, just with what we thought may or may not happen. I believe I stated that I didn't see him becoming a Leaf. So
I think I stated the same.
Yeah. So, but they've backed up a truck full of money to his front door, $50 million over the next 8 years, which makes him by far the highest paid coach in the league at $6.25 million a year, passing Joel Quenneville of the Blackhawks, who's currently making $2.75 million. So probably be some happy coaches around the league tonight as they see pretty good possibility of their salaries starting to go up.
There'll be here. Some renegotiating going on.
No doubt about summer. That. And it's funny when you look around.
Todd McClellan must be thinking, like, why didn't I wait? Like,
yeah,
two more days.
A day early? Yeah, exactly. Like, so
we're in the worlds on Sunday.
And I went to Edmonton.
With the Oilers on Tuesday.
If anyone deserves
six, Connor McDavid.
Yeah, Connor that's McDavid. True. But if anybody deserves $6 million, it's a guy going to Edmonton to live. Yeah. So it's funny, I didn't have a chance to check the NFL. I'm sure it's through the roof, but, you know, even the NBA in terms of number of games and stuff, their coaches are, you know, Greg Popovich is making, I think, $11 million this year. So, I mean, the NHL by comparison.
You only have to pay 15 players in the NBA.
Yeah, well, and there's something to that, right? But it is interesting to see how coaches are valued in the other sports compared to hockey. So that's interesting. You know, it begs to the question of what the Leafs are going to do now. Hopefully, they don't think that this negates the need for a complete overhaul and rebuild. But you don't bring in a Mike Babcock to, you know, suck for a couple of years. So you wonder what exactly is going to come of that, right?
Are there going to be moves in the summer? Are they going to commit themselves to Kessel and Phaneuf and?
Well, they're pretty committed at this point with another 6-7 years of yeah. big-time money. But
yeah, I don't know how you get out from under that, if indeed you want to.
Well, and you wonder, right, if maybe under Babcock they'd be a better fit. But the team itself is just not close to contending. Even if they do continue the rebuild, having a coach, what most people view to be at least a top-three coach in the league probably – you know, he's probably going to hurt your chances at the lottery if he's coaching your bad players into better positions than your team would have been otherwise. So, It's an interesting time for the move, I think. You know, with a rebuild, you're at least a few years away, but he won't be available in a few years. So if you believe this is the guy, I guess you overpay him up front, which it sounds like the deal is front-loaded. I think it's something like $8 million a year for the first 2 or 3 years and then dropping down. But, you know, you have to pay for those years, I guess, while you're not very good. And
so, yeah. It's very, very, it'll subsidize him coaching Team Canada next spring.
Yeah.
Well, the world.
Yeah, exactly. That was probably part of the sales pitch. Buffalo said, you know, we'll give you every dollar the Leafs will give you, and the Leafs could guarantee him he'd have May and June off, right? So, so we'll see exactly where that goes. Press conference tomorrow morning at 11 a.m., which is probably about the time this podcast will actually be published. So this will be a little bit of, it'll still be news, but not quite as fresh as it is right now. But I just wanted to get your thoughts on it before we moved on to the actual, you know, centerpiece for today. Do you think it really changes much for them? Or?
Well, I mean, if he's a guy who's won, and maybe that makes Toronto more sellable to like a free agent or whatnot. I mean, the big problem, one problem the Leafs have had is, means that Southern Ontario is the hotbed of, you know, turning into an NHL stars. I mean, obviously McDavid's just coming into the league. He's just at the intake point, but Steven Stamkos, guys like that, you know, Subban, and those guys don't want to play in Toronto because they want to deal with, having, 180 reporters, who are going to, tweet it out if you burped in the middle of an answer or something, right?
Yeah.
The Leafs should almost welcome a second team. It would cut the media core in half.
Yeah, and you wonder, like you say, if it is a selling feature to the free agents that, well, at least now they're showing that they're serious. And I don't know if he's going to turn out to be the guru that everybody seems to be purporting him to be, but he's certainly an upgrade over Randy Carlyle.
And the other guy,
Peter Horacek. Yeah, that didn't.
The third tenor?
Yeah, exactly. That didn't really pan out so well, right? So,
will this be the guru who didn't really have that many inspiring ideas? Kind of like Don Draper.
Oh, you can't be hating on Don Draper.
That's an obligation I had to fulfill.
Okay, well, fair enough. So I guess, it's one of those things that only time will tell how it's all going to pan out. But it's big news in Toronto, obviously, right now. And they'll now move on with their offseason, at least knowing whose team they're building, what type of coach they're going to have. And
that's a big thing, too.
Yeah. Who do you have? Who do you want? What type of coach? These are important things to know when you're trying to bring in players, right? What type of style are you going to be playing? So it at least gives them some direction and some credibility. And I guess we'll see where it goes from there. Moving on to the reason we actually were going to do this one. It's a Memorial Cup preview. It starts this Friday night, I believe, in Quebec City.
Indeed.
Between the hosts, is it Kelowna and Quebec kicking it off on the first night?
Kelowna, Quebec on the first night. So, Rimouski, Oshawa on Saturday afternoon.
Right.
At 4:30 puck drop.
You got to leave the teenagers free to enjoy their Saturday night, after the game.
Yeah.
That'll obviously be the one that has my my focus. I was an Oshawa kid growing up, so I didn't get to see a great deal of the finals against McDavid and the Otters, but obviously they made pretty quick work of them. Certainly the fifth game that I did see in its entirety showed, a bit of a letdown in the second, but for the most part, a game that the Generals pretty much dominated.
Yeah, they were able to contain Erie pretty well, and I think all three games, I think only four goals in the three games at General Motors Center, and McDavid only had 1 point in those games. I mean, they just ran a lot of checkers at him, made him pass a little earlier than he wanted to. I mean, there's only so much you can do with Connor McDavid. I mean, he's faster with the puck than without the puck.
Right.
And he's the fastest guy on the ice when he doesn't have it. So, it's just sort of a refresh my memory. But, yeah, they were able to wear Erie down. But the way I thought the series might have gone was a split in the first two, and then maybe Erie manages to win out on home, and then they set themselves up to only have to win their home games, right?
Right.
Yeah, Oshawa was able to nab game four on an overtime goal after an over-the-glass penalty. And that obviously was the series right there. Once you're down 3-1 against a team that's big and rugged and healthy, you're not going to come back. I mean, it did happen in the OHL final 2 years earlier, but that was, you know, different actors, different circumstances.
You wonder, the one thing that I noticed, and I know it's kind of an antiquated rule in the OHL, is obviously you can still ice the puck with, you know, no penalty in terms of you can still change your players. Or the Generals seem to take advantage of that quite a bit, like far more than Erie was. Just whenever they were in any kind of trouble, they would just dump it down. I wondered if it was, you know, the bigger bodies, they were getting tired a little quicker or whatever, but they seem to do it quite a bit. I can't remember seeing Erie do it more than once or twice in the game, but Generals seem to be doing it constantly.
It was a matter of just believing that, you know, they could win the faceoff and clear the zone with having the bigger team. London Knights did that a lot 3 years ago. They just iced the puck ad nauseum in the third period, like 15 times if they had to.
Well, and how long do you think Ontario Hockey League is going to keep that the way it is? I mean, at some point, you got to keep up with the rest of the hockey
world. Yeah, the other two leagues do have the same rule, and it's used in the Memorial Cup. Right. But the OHL, when it came in, Brian Killory was, well, you know, if we put this in, the kids on the fourth line will never get to play. And that sort of, you know, shut down any discussion of implementing it in the OHL. But there's definitely, like I say, two of the last four teams to win the league championship did it a lot. Now, conversely, the one argument against it is that you're still keeping some skill in the game because teams are less fearful of trying a long pass or using the, you know, that soft, you know, angled pass off the glass to try to, you know, get an odd man rush going the other way. Guelph Storm were great at that last year, and, you know, won all the way to the Memorial Cup final. So, I mean, that's one advantage of keeping it, but it is an oddity, definitely, that one league out of the three doesn't use it for their whole season, and then you got to switch for the Memorial Cup. But, I mean, it's just one small part of the game. I kind of wish they did have stats to see whether you had games that had more face-offs.
Right, yeah.
But, like, the Quebec League's the only one that publishes face-off stats in the game summary, so you find out how many... Frederick Gauthier.
Gauthier is exactly.
He took twice as many faceoffs as any other QMJHL player during the face playoffs. So there were some games where he took like 35 faceoffs or 40 just because he would take it and step off the ice.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You wonder how many times you see, you know, when they face off him versus Cole Castles, which...
Well, he's one of the best defensemen in junior hockey. He just happens to be listed at center.
Yeah, exactly. So... we'll get into this a little bit. I just finished reading your article on Buzzing the Net about the Oshawa Generals. Is this something you're going to do one for each team leading up?
Oh, we got the other guys. We got our Quebec League guy doing the two Quebec teams.
Okay, that makes
Kelly Friesen writing the Kelowna Rockets one. Right. But the gauntlet is thrown down. You guys have it better be just as good, if not better. I don't want to be showing anyone up.
Well, it was a good piece. It took a good look at the Generals going into it. I think to start, we'll maybe go through this just kind of briefly team by team. Starting with the host Ramparts, a couple different websites that had listed, you know, some players maybe to watch moving on. They had a couple of guys, including Anthony Duclair and Zach Fucali, who were on the Canadian World Junior team. Ryan Graves, who we talked about a second ago before we went on the air, I was wondering if he was related to former Ranger.
No, but he is signed by the Rangers. That makes it even more confusing.
Exactly, right? That's kind of, I think, I got that here in my notes. He's one of the New York Rangers draft picks. I thought maybe there was some synergy there or something to be tied in, but apparently not. You know, they battled Rimouski pretty hard in the Quebec League final. I think most people thought going into the season that Rimouski would be kind of the class of the Quebec League, but Quebec hung right with them. And, you know, do you have any... What are you kind of expecting out of them at the tournament?
Now, Quebec, it's a favorable situation, right? Host team, I mean, it's definitely something that's picked up the excitement as the series went along, because having the final go seven games was probably great for the atmosphere that's going to be around the tournament, and obviously...
Keeps building it up.
Yeah, I mean, in Quebec, I think in the previous... In two, or was it all three... Seriously, they played teams in the Maritimes. When you do that, you play 2-3-2. So you played like two games on a weekend. Then you could be out of town for an entire week. And the energy kind of dissipates.
Yeah.
But, you know, they went 7 with Rimouski, though. I think no home team won until game 7 when Rimouski won in double OT. So obviously, you know, they're, you know, these two teams have played 17 times this season.
Unbelievable.
I mean, you count the regular season, the preseason, and the seven game series, it could be 18. It might end up being 19 if they meet in an elimination game. So, I mean, obviously, there's so much drama there. I mean, Quebec's coach Philippe Boucher was in Rimouski, so he started the ball rolling for that team, you know, drafting and developing, you know, a lot of the guys who, you know, ended up keeping his team from winning the championship. But as you mentioned, Matt, like, you know, Quebec, they sort of put it together in the playoffs. They've got a, you know, really strong first line. Kurt Echegaray, their captain, who's a guy who's had a lot of injuries and illness to, you know, stay in hockey, and then got him between Duclair and then Adam Ernie, who had 21 goals in 22 playoff games, the Lightning prospect. The other guy from Quebec they drafted 2 years ago, besides Drouin.
Yeah.
It's not, and ended up being a playoff MVP, even though he was on a runner-up team. I mean, who does that?
Yeah, that's tough. Yeah.
Who does that besides Connor McDavid?
Yeah.
His whole thing, but I'm leaving the trophy in the hallway.
Yeah, no, I know.
Well, where else was he going to take it? Take it into a tiny dressing room where it might get, you know, damaged?
Where everybody had just lost.
Yeah.
Here's my trophy.
He did that because he didn't want to face his team.
Yeah.
They've definitely got some offense, and obviously Fucali, you know, they sort of lit a bit of a fire under him by not playing him at the start of the playoffs for a couple of games because he'd slumped late in the regular season. He's, you know, stepped two and had a decent playoff. Defensively, I mean, there's no big shutdown guy on that team. Like the other three teams, you all have an identifiable first 1A and 1B type defenseman. Graves is kind of closest to that on Quebec. Massimo Carrozza he's probably their steadiest to get the
great
steadiest
name
guy.
Too,
yeah, that's like the ultimate Quebec League name. Whereas out in the WHL, it'd be some guy named like Braden or something.
For sure, it's Braden. Yeah,
Dryden with no E in it. I'm sure you saw that Deadspin post of names in the WHL
yes,
draft. Kales and Coles with a K. It's like, yeah.
Definitely worth a look if you haven't seen it yet. It's wasn't too long ago.
Always remind. I think what was it the 1 year of it when I was out in Portage and started like for one high school girls basketball team. Their five starters. They had a Kayla, a Kaylee, and a Kelsey.
Of course they did.
I'm sure there was another Kay.
There's a Kelly on the bench somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. anyway, so yeah, Quebec. It's definitely an see how they go. I know they have dealing with one semi-significant injury because Marc-Olivier Roy, who's a second rounder of the Oilers, he was banged up a little and during that Rimouski series. We don't know how close to 100%, how far from 100% that he is, but obviously they're in a situation they've dealt with this all year, and you know, they made a great showing by going to Game 7 of the final. It's kind of like about 8 years ago, the Vancouver Giants were the same thing. They ended up going to the final as the Memorial Cup host and playing Medicine Hat. And they went the same thing, Game 7 overtime in the final and lost, but then they won the tournament. So
right. They're
right there. But
one of those teams that you hate to see that when a host, you know, maybe he's out in the second round of the playoffs and then it just, you know, you clearly don't belong there. You've had a month off, so you're practicing and you're a little rusty and whatever. Everybody else shows up on, you know, 5 days since their league championship kind of thing. So
yeah, you do see some teams show up and they're a little bit spent. I don't know if that'll apply to the two OHL and the OHL and the WHL teams because they both got through their series fast.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but yeah, I mean, certainly it has been a fact. Certainly Shewin again worked to their advantage when they went out in the second round in 2012 and then won the tournament.
Yeah, I guess that'd be the most recent one that, you know, sat around for just looking at the teams they could potentially working on their own game and resting and whatever.
Literally was like take a week off and then they basically held like a boot camp. And
yeah.
Once they got up to speed, there was no stopping them and they ended up coming through the tiebreaker and winning. And it was just kind of like, this is kind of cheesy. I prefer it when the host team goes to the semifinal, third round, you know, at least you can say, okay, you put up a good show.
Yeah, and now you're competitive.
And now the league final, like, there's no perception that these teams are just going to coast through the final.
Right, exactly.
Because people will say that, well, what's the point of playing the final if they're both going? Well, there's still a trophy to play for.
Yeah.
And It's maybe a hard sell with people think the Memorial Cup's the only trophy that matters, and the league championships aren't as important. When you're,
sure doesn't look like it when you watch those teams celebrate their league championship. Like, you can tell they wanted it, right? And
yeah,
that's where you played your whole season. These are the guys you battled and been measured against for 8 months, right? And you can tell they want it, right? And
probably like 8 years, because you're playing every guy you ever.
Bantam and
guys you knew all through Pee Wee and Bantam and Midget. Whereas in the Memorial Cup, you're kind of like, who are these? I mean, you're sort of like, okay, I know this guy because we were at a camp or
that top prospects game or something.
Yeah, you've got people from the other leagues, but there isn't the same animosity. Maybe there is a little, because like there's always the they can all say they don't pay any attention to it, but there's always the pre-term talk. All these guys are the favorites,
right?
This team's the favorite, and so this is going to be an interesting tournament. Yeah, I think if any one of the four can win, and I'm stating that as confidently as I probably am. I mean, there's definitely ones where I've been to where I was just kind of like, these guys have no shot to win it. Like last year, it was either Edmonton or Guelph for me. I didn't think Val-d'Or or London had any chance.
Right. Moving down to Rimouski, the Quebec League champions. I think most people had them most of the season, going into the season, as kind of the favorites. People put their eye on a really good team. In terms of players to watch, they obviously have Sam Morin from, he's a Philadelphia draft pick, and Freddie Gauthier of the Leafs, who you mentioned a few minutes ago. Anything else of note out of them you think you would want to, what their team looks like, what you're expecting from them?
This year, what they really had to deal with is they had something like more than 300 man games lost to injuries, and they still finished first overall. And I mean, that was with, they list five drafted or six drafted players on the league website, but one of them, Vincent Dunn, was basically sent home just for basically kind of being a bad seed from what I gather. Senators pick.
Okay. Great. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Just remember seeing him play one game. He had to play the last game of the year when each team was sitting out about 10 regulars for the playoffs, and he just looked unhappy to be there. It'd be like you'd get the puck and then someone would come and hit, knocked away from him, and you'd just be like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Like beer league effort, Anyway, but good solid defenseman, Jan Kostelic, sort of that steady, smart defenseman who really stands out at junior when he's 19 and then, can maybe make a good contribution to the NHL as a third pairing type guy, signed by Winnipeg, played for the Czech Republic in the World Junior. So and he really sort of held the fort down, and because Morin was, away at times and injured at other times. They have solid overage defenseman named Charles David Baudouin, who's just been a rock back there. A guy they picked up from, I think, Drummondville. Here, he was like a big part of that team. He was like a hometown guy playing for his hometown team, but they were in a rebuild mode. And they've definitely got some a solid defense. I saw them in the second round against Gatineau, and they were just very good at just, quick breaking it up and getting back to the offense. But they're a bit offense by committee, definitely.
No big standout
snipers. Yeah. Christopher Clapperton's the overage, and he's a Florida pick. He's not a big guy, but he can, he can snap a shot off. Alexis Loiseau, like awesome. Another awesome name.
Yeah. Well, I was actually still enjoying Christopher Clapperton.
That was that's one of those ones, definitely alliterative. Anthony DeLuca is another guy. He was one of those guys, high pick coming out of midget hockey, but, you're drafting guys to play in your league, not to where they're going to be picked in the next league. He's 5'8", but he can, again, another just a guy who's just a great scorer at the junior level, and they sort of get contributions from everybody up and down the lineup. Older team, goaltending is the really interesting part with them, because I'm sort of looking up, I mentioned Appleby was the only goalie of the four teams who was in net for 16 playoff wins. Philippe Desrosiers was, who 2 years ago, when Canada won the World Under 18, when McDavid was a 15-year-old, so he dominated the tournament as a double underage player. Desrosiers was the goalie on that team, and Canada had him at the summer development camp this year, and then he sort of just tailed off a little in the playoffs and struggled. So they put the guy who was the insurance policy, Louis-Philippe Gendon, in another 19, nice to have another 19-year-old to play.
Right.
He reeled off about 11 wins in a row with him in net.
hard to get back in at that point.
But then, yeah, and then they sort of just before Game 7, after that series where, again, where no home team had won, and Serge Beausoleil, the coach, just rolls the dice and puts DeRozier back in. He makes stops 47 of 48.
Oh, wow.
Of course, he's probably, you know, he's fresh mentally, and they had to play back-to-back. And people are making it out like this was the, you know, the coaching move of the century. This is, you know, this is Mayo Smith moving his center fielder to shortstop in the 68 World Series, or when the Blue Jays put Paul Molitor in at third so they could get Olerud's bat and sat John Olerud when he was the batting champ or whatever. But no, I mean, this is what you'd probably normally do if you,
you're going back to your number one guy.
Back-to-back nights against the same team. Of course, you'd give them both goalies.
Yep.
So now they're going into that tournament with, Maybe the opportunity to indulge in some shenanigans about which goal he's starting, which is good. The London Knights always do that, and they're not here this time.
Right.
For one, is this even a sanctioned Memorial Cup? Because the London Knights are not.
Yeah, I know. It seems to be pretty frequent that they're there. Yeah,
actually, Mark Reeds, you know, may he rest in peace. He had a lot. I mean, he used three different starting goalies in the playoffs in 2011, and then obviously he only had the two. He was rotating Scott Stager and then Jordan Binnington, who ended up in the Blues system where Mark Reeds played. And he had everyone on it guessing which goaltender he was going to play through the whole tournament. And the two of them were even doing like joint interviews, like, oh, I don't know. No, I don't know. Ask, you know, it's like, ask Scott. I don't know. Ask Jordan.
Yeah, there's some of the stuff that happens in these playoffs to keep people guessing gets a little carried away sometimes, I think. But whatever you got to do, I guess, to feel like you're giving yourself an edge. But before we move on to Oshawa, I did want to bring up, and I forgot before we left Quebec, I thought of it here as we've been talking about goaltending. Zach Fucali, to go back to Quebec, a real interesting guy. As he said, he kind of struggled again late in the season. That was always kind of encapsulated into a smaller form in the last couple of World Juniors where he was the guy, but he wasn't the guy, especially last year where, you know, they didn't end up sticking with him. And obviously it went better for him this year with such a powerhouse team.
Yeah. I mean, I think they could have switched the rotation for the two games. If it could have gone Comrie Fucali for Fucali Comrie, and I think the result might have been the same with that team.
Right. No, I mean, absolutely.
They understood the whole tandem thing very well, and just, you know, we're good with it, and I think the big thing was mature enough to accept it.
Yeah.
You know, not every goalie's gonna buy into that. There's always gonna be the one, well, how come, you know, I should have earned a second start in a row or whatever, but they were good with that, and I mean, ultimately it worked out. I mean, there is always that sort of. I mean, there are definitely a lot of doubters with Fucali, but everyone's a goalie expert in Canada, as you know. I mean, he's got a Memorial Cup title and a World Junior gold medal, and you can point out what the stats are. But I mean, you have to take the you know, stats and especially shot counts in a junior with a lot. A grains of salt. It's not accurate from rink to rink, and the Q has got a lot of rinks that I think undercount. Right. And you don't know about the quality, right? And
no,
if someone's getting a chance to wind up from the slot, I mean, off a cross-seam pass, you're not stopping it no matter who you are.
Right. Do you think it's a confidence thing for him? Like, as you said, he's kind of up and down, but he's gotten the job done almost everything.
He got to interview him a little.
Just here and there. Streaky, right?
Yeah, I think it's sometimes just overthinking or overplaying things.
Because at times you can see him, he's good enough that he could win this tournament for them on his own. And if he goes into one of those slides, they might be out of it before it even, you know, you lose your first two games here in the round robin. It's.
Yeah, I think sometimes it's just technique, and I think maybe sometimes it's an overthinking thing. And plus, he's played so much hockey. He had to play 58 games when he was a 16-year-old, and then he basically didn't get many nights off in his 17-year-old year. And you know, sometimes there's just a bit of a wear down. And at the same time, sometimes someone who's gifted needs that challenge, and you know, obviously he'll get it next year when he moves up to the AHL. Mm-hmm. Is to go to St. John's.
Yeah.
stay out.
There's a whole lot of shuffling happening there. With the what used to be Hamilton, and they're now getting the Belleville Bulls from the Ontario League. And
Still the Hamilton Bulldogs.
Yeah.
I don't even think they changed the jersey.
Winnipeg's moving their farm team into Winnipeg, and Montreal's moving theirs to St. John's, I guess. Like, it's
for until they get the new rink in Lavelle.
Is that the deal?
That's the plan. Of course, you know, no construction project in Quebec ever runs behind schedule.
Seems like a whole lot of shuffling there, right? But like you said, Fucale, you know,
My favorite ever Quebec story is still that. The fact that debt on the Big O was still not paid off when the Expos left.
Yeah, that just seems to be how it works with some of their government projects.
Lowball Construction Inc.
to go back to Fucale, if he gets hot, like I said, he could have a big thing, but he doesn't seem like the kind of guy that you can totally bet on what you're going to get night to night, right?
Yeah, certainly. But I mean, if they get the Fucale, who was the first goalie drafted 2 years ago, they're very dangerous.
Yeah. Continuing to move west, the Oshawa Generals, who we touched on a little bit, finished the regular season as the second best team in the league, and I felt like, for the season they had, they were kind of, maybe not underrated, but forgotten through the playoffs, as a lot of people expected.
Yeah, I think forgotten is overlooked, overshadowed. Yeah,
as some people looked at maybe the Sioux knocking them off, certainly Erie with McDavid and Strome and all their star power got more attention. I don't know if anyone was openly stating they were a better team, but certainly got the lion's share of attention. You know, people forget just how long and how many times through the season that Oshawa was right at the top of the power rankings across the CHL kind of thing.
Yeah, the best team in the country. Including the ones we do. It was Kelowna, Oshawa.
Right.
We're at the top of our rankings for most of the year. And then the Sioux Greyhounds made all those trades, and they barely lost a game in the second half of the year. Like, they went through the time they got Darnell. Between the time Darnell Nurse came back from the World Junior and the start of the third round, they lost something like three games.
Oh, my goodness.
And I mean, Nurse, and they were doing it with there was a period stretch in February where they had only 16 players available. They were just crushing it. And, obviously, Erie with McDavid was dangerous. And Oshawa was just, steady as it comes. A team that had always had a lot of puck possession but Michael Del Cole's obviously a high pick, but they didn't have that identifiable superstar. I guess there wasn't that buzzy factor with the Generals because they were a good team the year
before. Yeah, kind of a lunchbox crew, right?
They do sort of fit into that very much. So, and plus, in the OHL, there's always a lot more focus on the Western Conference in the OHL, just because it's
a good reason.
It's got the flagship. Yeah. I mean, eight championships in a row and whatever. I think 12 of the last 13. And then
you've mentioned a few of them, right? The Guelphs and the Londons. Windsor was great for a couple of years there.
And all the heavily covered teams tend to be on that side. Right. Like the teams that have a lot of media talking about them, Guelph, London, Kitchener, all close, being close to Toronto. I mean, they were a little bit more on the media's radar. Sault Ste. Marie is a, passionately followed franchise. You've also got, the three American teams in there, Windsor as well. So it sort of does, and those teams are also closer to the U.S. border, more or less. So that sort of helps with having that pipeline into the States for recruiting. Although obviously Oshawa's, has some American players. Although Michael McCarron was from a trade. I guess Jeremy Brodeur counts as American. He was another one who was going to play major junior no matter what. And they've got a defenseman named Chris Carlisle who's from New Jersey. So. But I've generally noticed the Western teams tend to have more American kids as a general rule. So There's just a lot of things that line up that I think underpinning the fact. Obviously you don't want to take away from anyone's achievements, or how hard, say Mark Hunter worked in London to find players. But I think there were some environmental factors, I guess, that led to why the West was so good for so long, and why the Eastern teams, even if someone's good, it's always like, yeah, but they're in the East. Like, everyone just remembers the year Barry had like 116 points, and then went boom, four straight. And Niagara had that really good team 3 years ago with Strome and the Hamiltons and Jamie Oleksiak, who might not even be the best athlete in his family, by the way.
They had Net there.
That was Byzantine's last year. Mark Byzantine's last year after he'd played back-to-back World Juniors, and London took them out in five. So, and it was a time an Eastern team won. I mean, definitely all those years of those teams sort of having being able to pick earlier in the priority selection, eventually it was going to add up to something.
To catch up, yeah.
Yeah, like Dal Cole was a really high pick, but I mean, Cole Castles wasn't a high pick. He was somewhat, but he was someone the Generals drew a bead on as someone who could be a great player for them.
And he had a really good series against McDavid. There were times where it didn't look like he was even mildly interested in the puck. He was just going to stay right on McDavid. He was one of the, along with Hunter, I think, was another guy that they just take him out, right? Take care of him. And that seemed to be their sole responsibility in terms of trying to shut down Erie and those powerful forwards they had.
Yeah, those two and Bradley Latour are like three big, strong 19-year-old guys. And I mean, and they were very focused on that. They'll be focused on the Etchegaray, Duclair, Ernie line, I'm sure, and they'll play against Kelowna's top guys too, which are going to be a challenge for sure. But Oshawa, like I say, they certainly have a chance, and they can wear teams down. I don't know how they rate offensively though. That's
gonna
And in this, I mean, when chances are going to be at a premium, you still need. You know, that's a certain potency to win.
Well, and that's it. Like, we've talked about, you know, some of the way that some of these teams are playing, it's a little more defensive. Maybe not, like you said, a stud defenseman, but especially from those two Quebec teams, they seem to defend pretty well by committee, right? And like you said, if we get a couple of hot goaltenders, you know, you need some type of game breaker. And I think Dal Cole has the ability to do that, but he's not going to have a whole lot of support in terms of, you know, big, dynamic offensive stars. Right?
Oshawa likes to, you know, change lines around, move people around. And they did have a very good power play through the playoffs, and a lot of that was, you know, a lot of credit that goes to Michael Dal Cole there.
Well, and, you know, he, as you said, the power play, once it got going, there was a couple times there, I think, even in that deciding Game 5 where it made an impact on some bad penalties there. I think in the first, if I remember correctly, they got two power play goals right off the hop. So
one interesting thing I was wondering about Dal Cole, because it's his age 18 year, is I just realized how little time players get off from the start of their age 17 season through the end of their age 18 year. Because I just remember the Memorial Cup last season in London, Max Domi and Bo Horvat both just looked spent. You know, they didn't have that same zip or jump. And then you kind of wonder, oh, geez, I guess these guys aren't as close to being good as we thought they were.
Right.
And then what happens? Horvat makes the NHL. Domi's like, you know, one of the best forwards in the world, junior.
Well, and I guess when you say it like that, there is that summer development camp, and then you're right into your own training camp and your club season. Yeah. And then for some of the top guys, it's the Subway Super Series, so you're a couple extra games there.
They're playing too much hockey, but I just think...
World Juniors and your top prospects game after that, and it just keeps going, right?
If you're like an utmost echelon player, you've got the Ivan Hlinka before your 17 year, and then you've got that season, probably adjusting to more ice time, and then regardless of how your team season ends, you're either A, spending all your time in the gym getting ready for combine and summer development camps, or going through a huge, grueling playoff run.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
or play, and then if you're out after one round, you might have you might go to the U18. So that's just not much. And then right after the draft, and you got the summer development camp, then maybe a Hockey Canada summer development camp, then an NHL camp. And you just wonder when the burnout catches up with these
guys.
Once
you play that season, if you're still down there after your draft, you're probably reasonable possibility the World Juniors. And then maybe even once you're eliminated, some of these kids get sent to the AHL playoffs. So it goes on and on.
And then at some point, maybe the physical maturity does start to catch up, and then you see, okay, there was nothing to worry about. I think that's the biggest difference between being an 18-year-old and a 19-year-old.
Yeah.
And obviously you get more attention. You're jumping up to a higher quality of competition when you go from with each year, because you're obviously not, you know, there's a similar phenomenon, I think, too, with, you know, the guy who scores 30 goals as a 16-year-old goaltender is like, oh, he's going to score 50.
Right.
And it's like, no, not necessarily.
Got to grow into that
body.
His
team's going to ask him to do more things. Yeah. He's going to have some penalty kill. Like that.
Developing.
Duclair and Ernie both went through that. Everyone's like, oh, these guys would be top 10 picks for sure. And it's like, no, their coach is going to want them to play more defense. He's not just going to throw them out, try to get them out against fourth lines and third pairings and just worry about scoring.
Duclair's an interesting guy, as you mentioned, like, other than people like yourself and hardcore junior hockey fans, how many average hockey fans had ever heard of Anthony Duclair before the World Juniors, right? Who sent back from the Rangers. He'd kind of made the, but he wasn't a top, you know.
And even 80th overall. Yeah. I mean, he started the year high on a lot of lists because he had, I mean, you could see the speed and the skill. I saw one of his very first junior games, like in, I guess it would have been September of 2011, against the an exhibition game against the 67s at the Civic Center, or whatever they're calling it this week. And you could see it, or you could see how good the two of them had the potential to be, but then it was just kind of, they took a bit of a somewhat of a detour. I mean, they were still on the radar for top prospects and things like that, but I know Duclair, you know, he was just stuff with emotional maturity and getting, being in the right headspace. And
he would have had a head spinning year, you know, after the World Juniors, and like, hey, everything's going awesome. Well, I'm getting sent back to junior instead of going back to Manhattan. Oh my God, I've been traded to Arizona and I'm not a Ranger.
Yeah. Like,
that's a rough
year. Yeah, and he's had good playoffs, but I'm just thinking about 2 years ago why he sort of slipped down. And that was a stacked draft too, but the Rangers got an absolute steal with him at 80th overall.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think it just goes to show that, you know, some of these people don't, or some of these guys don't really become named guys until they get that Hockey Canada stamp, right? And then everyone just assumes, well, if he played for the World Junior team, he's going to be a, you look at some of those old World Junior rosters and whatever happened to that freaking guy, right?
where have you gone?
Yeah.
Where have you gone?
Led the tournament in scoring. Dines. Yeah, well, exactly. That's a great example, right? So you just want, Colton Tubert was a
Stefan Lajan. Stefan Lajan.
Yeah. Awesome. So like, there's just so many.
He played in two.
Was that the guy who I think ended up quitting for Columbus, or was that just phoned him up and said, I'm done? And,
yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a lot of instances where, you know, just because you make that Canadian team, you were the best for that couple of months, doesn't mean it's going to turn into a multi-million dollar career for you, right? So,
yeah.
To get back to Oshawa, they're kind of anchored at the back end by some older guys. Appleby in goal, I believe, is 19. Is that?
Yeah, correct? Appleby's 19, but all three OAs are all on defense.
Yeah.
Josh Brown and Dakota Mermis, who kind of, they're kind of the two main guys. Sometimes they split up. I think they usually play together at home because they can get them out more often. But then when they don't have last change, they split them.
Right.
Chris Carlisle's kind of that, you know, small, skilled guy who makes decisions. And then the guy who's really been their breakout person during the playoff run or the latter half of it was Stephen DeRoche. Who I'm sure is going to have a million, do you speak French, questions from the Quebec media, because they're going to see the last name. And it's one of, I'm not making fun of it. It's like one of the challenges when you're,
well, it's like
in the French language media and in an English speaking world is always trying to find someone who's bilingual. And I'm just wondering who it's going to be on Oshawa. I don't know about it. The only guy I could think of was Will Pechenek, the one defenseman, because he's from Ottawa.
Right, maybe.
But he broke his arm, so he's not going to play.
Yeah, that's right.
So what's going to happen? Anyway, to get back on point, yeah.
Well, it reminds me of when Rene Bourque was traded from Calgary to Montreal. I saw an interview where he said, boy, are they going to be disappointed. Like, they know my name, but I don't speak a word of French, despite that name.
So. Yeah, that's like the famous Bill Simmons call, the Reggie Cleveland All-Stars. You know, people, you know, players whose names sound white but are African-American, right. Vice versa, like Marcus Giles.
Yes.
You should almost think of that. The Rene Bourque All-Stars for hockey. Laurent Brossois was one. Remember
that's
him.
Right, yeah.
Will King's goalie. You know, even a French first name? No, yes. not a word. But they did have a couple of French speakers on that Edmonton team.
Right.
Apparently there isn't one on the, I don't know if there is one on the Kelowna Rockets or Oshawa Generals.
It's harder to find when you get into some of those Ontario, especially
it depends
the Western
on team. If you have guys from farther west of Toronto, basically. Scott Harrington, got to give a shout out to a Kingston guy. He was London's go-to guy for that, for the two Memorial Cups he played.
Yeah.
Oh, he was a French immersion
guy.
And he was like someone who was like, okay, I'm going to, he was like, I even like, you know, got the books and back out and looked. he was that type of guy who wanted to do it. But yeah, the Generals, it's, you know, it's a pretty stout defensive team, good depth.
I mean, really good depth up front. It seems, for the way they've set it up, to have your older, bigger, more developed guys on that back end, right, to be shut down guys. And you're a 19, 20-year-old defenseman, you can probably throw around a 17-year-old right winger pretty easily, right?
And they've definitely, you know, Josh Brown's a guy who's sort of just come along, you know, slow, you know, steadily over the last 3 years. And He was, a re-entry draft pick by Florida and got signed by them just before the playoffs. And didn't let that become a distraction. Sometimes guys, when they get the contract, they start to drift a little.
Yeah, absolutely.
Josh, he's been just solid for that team. Glad I wrote about him before the final. Not that anyone noticed. But, they're indeed, I think a pretty formidable team. It's just a matter of how does that translate from the league level to the Memorial Cup level.
Right. To finish off our fourth team, the Kelowna Rockets, as you mentioned, you guys had them ranked most of the season as one of the top couple of teams in across the nation. So probably no real surprise to you that they're coming out of there. Were you surprised at how bad they smashed Brandon in the final?
Four in a row.
Yeah.
Got to say I didn't see that coming.
Right.
But from what I gather, once they sort of, took in with the Portland Winterhawks, it was kind of like, let's go climb up the face of a mountain without any support rocks. I just felt like that invincible. And
they looked like it, apparently.
And they caught a Brandon team that I think was, Brandon sort of looking to peak next season. They kind of got there a year ahead of schedule.
Right.
I mean, it obviously got a lot of talent on that team. And some, like Nolan Patrick, everyone's going to be talking about him in 2 years.
Well, some recognizable names here for a lot of people. Leon Draisaitl, of course, last year's Edmonton Oiler, I think third overall, maybe?
Third overall to the Oilers last year.
Morrissey of the Winnipeg Jets and Madison Bowie of Washington. So, they're pretty, that's your number one center and your number one and two defenseman. That's not bad. And a lot of talk about Chartier and Merkley on the wings with Draisaitl just being an absolutely dominant line.
Yeah, that's a line they just kind of put together right at the start of the final because Chartier had been injured, I guess, against Portland. 48-goal scorer during the regular season. And they weren't sure, and I guess he got back in time for game one and they put that line together and they were just lights in, the three of them. Merkley's an interesting guy because he's unbelievable hockey sense, but you always wonder how playmakers
eligible this year for the draft.
Yeah, you always wonder about the whole thing, playmakers versus people who were big time goal scorers, because I think he had 90 points but 70 of them were assists, and it's kind of hard to be a playmaking winger at the NHL level. I mean, you gotta do that from the center spot. I remember Shane Prince when he had a lot of buzz with the 67s, and it was kind of like, there aren't really left wing pass first wingers who aren't big guys who translate to the next level. This year he finally just made it up with the Senators.
One example also would be, early on when Patrick Kane came up, right? He was a real sniper when he was a kid, but when he came up, he tried to kind of reinvent himself as a player. He always had that touch and everything, but he tried to make a lot of plays and make a lot of passes, maybe just feeling like you should defer to the vets or whatever, but it didn't take him long to realize that, that's difficult to do on the wing. I'm just going to go back to shooting.
He can't be predictable.
And that's turned out pretty well for him. So,
indeed. They're a dangerous team. They've got those three. I mean, they score a lot of goals during the season. Tyson Bailey's kind of another player, one of those guys who's even not drafted, so he's not on the radar, but he can snipe at the the Western League level. Now they are missing Tyrell Goldborn. I did see last night the coach Dan Lambert was on TSN 1260 in Edmonton, mentioned that Goldborn, who's kind of their rugged, bull in a china shop winger. Of course, he's a Flyer signing.
Of course,
he's not going to play the tournament. That's guaranteed. Now, granted, maybe they were sandbagging, but at the same time, it wasn't like a hedge. It was like, he's definitely not going to play. They would definitely need him in like the Oshawa and Rimouski games.
Right.
Yeah, I could see him playing a big role in those games if he was able to play. So not having him hurts, but I mean, they can definitely push the pace and, set the tempo with Bowie and Morrissey. I mean, if you play the cards right, you can basically have them on the ice for three quarters of the game, probably.
Yeah.
Counting when they'd be together and when they would be separated and when we would be together, and then plus you play the cards right with the media timeouts that make
seem to change
Sportsnet broadcasts last forever.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Like, we're to the point where a 7 o'clock game on Sportsnet ends at the same time as a 7:30 game. It's just on community cable. Because I've seen it happen.
Yeah.
So that certainly, I think that's something that's going to work in Kelowna's favor. I mean, they're already a fresh team, but to be able to keep your you know, two world class junior defensemen on the ice. Well, that much is going to help them a lot.
Even if when you don't have them out there, now you're looking at maybe you could put out that Draisaitl top line and just hem the team into the other end for those couple of shifts, right? Well, you're not out those. Like, they're going to be a real tough team, I think. To me, clearly a novice compared to what you do with this. It looks like an Oshawa-Kelowna final to me.
That's quite possible.
Yeah.
And it that would be odd if it happened again, because that's what happened 6 years ago. It was the OHL and the WHL team played in a final in Quebec.
In Quebec, right. yeah, and it, like, to me, it just – that Kelowna team looks real deep. They've got some real, impact guys. Like, all three of those names – well, Draisaitl from his draft, and then Bowie and Morrissey, obviously world junior credentials, right? They're not going to be fazed by the big stage. I think Morrissey's played in two World Juniors now, actually.
Yeah, Morrissey's second time, he was there on that 14 team.
Yeah, so I mean, I just, those guys look like they'll have it together. And I guess you certainly can't underestimate the Quebec teams, but it just looks like in terms of being able to physically overpower people, it looks like, to me, those two Western teams, if you want to call Oshawa, it's West of Quebec.
Yeah, West of Quebec, West of Kingston.
That's maybe how it's going to come down to it. So in a more overarching sense, you know, which games early on here through the round robin are you looking at as probably being can't miss TV?
Oh, I definitely think the Friday nighter, just to see where Quebec is at after going through an emotional final, just to see how Kelowna comes out and how it plays on the big stage.
That building will be loud.
It will be. I guess the Rockets actually played in the 2003 Memorial Cup that was also in the Colisée. So I wonder if they sort of get anyone to talk to the guys about what it was like. They lost the semifinal of that one.
Funny thing about
it, they won the Memorial Cup the next year. So
those kids would have been 5 years old, the ones on this team, right? Junior hockey is not that long ago.
Somebody always knows somebody.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
And say, guys, don't worry about it, or this is what you're going to be faced with. Here's how we dealt with it, or to try to give ourselves a chance to win. Yeah, but yeah, Kelowna's Oshawa Rimouski. I guess that's the equivalent of lining up two Zambonis in a game of chicken. It's just the way their team's profile. I mean, it's going to be Gauthier versus Castles probably on every major face-off in the whole game. Yeah. Yeah, if you like your Canadian NHL team draft picks, and I mean really like that's the one, because you got a Toronto and a Winnipeg guy on Rimouski.
Yeah.
Then you've got Ottawa, Montreal, Calgary, and Vancouver on.
That's true.
On the Generals. Just don't have the Oilers.
But, at this point, all the Oilers' young kids are in the league.
Exactly. So, all their teenagers are already playing.
Yeah. So, to me, that looks like it should be. Just because of what I've said about what I think the final is going to be, I'm looking a little later in the week to Oshawa Kelowna. I think that's going to be a great, fun one to watch. And then I want to see.
That's the Tuesday nighter, I think.
I believe so, yeah.
That's the Tuesday night for, cheap night at the movies is always when the two out of league teams play. I don't know if that was ever set up on purpose, but it's set up so the two teams from the Oost League meet on the last night of the round robin. And but that Tuesday night game, there it's a little bit more of a muted atmosphere when
absolutely, yeah.
When you don't have one team from the Oost League playing.
And as the other one for me, I'm looking forward to will be the rematch for those two Quebec teams, just to see what kind of hatred might be left over from that long 7-game series, right? That should be a physical one. That should be, to me, renewing of hostilities. That'd be fun to watch too.
So. Oh yeah, I mean, I think this is a tournament with a strong chance they'll need a tiebreaker game on the Thursday. Didn't have one last year.
Yeah,
it was nice to have that night off.
I believe it. It looks like it should be. Like you said, there's a reasonable possibility for that with some of the balance across. But it's always interesting to see, right? But just have no idea year to year what the league itself strength is against the other two. So you never really know what's going to happen when you get pull these teams. You can sit around and predict and prognosticate and whatnot. But until you start to match up league versus league, it's really hard to tell what you're going
to
get.
So. Yeah. To that, I would point out, I guess two of the last four, and I guess that were hosted by QMJHL teams have been won by the OHL representative, because Windsor in 2009 and Kitchener back in 2003 with Mike Richards. And I guess, but it depends on where the team's at coming in. And then no WHL teams won one hosted by a Quebec league team since 1994.
Really?
So, but I mean, these things are, I always couch that in, you know, these things are random and they're due. They're like flipping a coin or rolling a die. You're not really pattern. Absolutely. It's just happenstance.
Yeah. It's always, so, you know, you see some crazy statistic in any sport, right? Like where the Ottawa Senators haven't won in Los Angeles since 2004. And you go, man, that's a long.
And then you're
probably
been
there like three times.
They play there every other year.
Yeah, it's not that long. Right? Throw in a couple of lockouts. And
yeah, just as an example, I was saying, I think before the Memorial Cup 2 years ago, I was kind of like, I think I had looked it up that no QMJHL team had ever. No, it was like no team from the QMJHL team had won a Memorial Cup held in the West in like forever. And I was just like, well, you know, MacKinnon and Drouin, it's probably going to end.
Yeah.
I think the only time it had happened was like when the Cornwall Royals were a QMJHL team. So even that doesn't, I was like, technically that doesn't count. They were an Ontario team. They were from Ontario. They right. played in the Q. That was the one where the Peter Rapide supposedly threw the last game of the round robin to try to,
oh, that's right,
to avoid the facing the WHL team.
Yeah, it never works out well when you try and pick your opponent.
Yeah, you end up firing up somebody.
Yeah, absolutely. So that should be it for the tournament. It looks pretty good. If you had to make a prediction on what you think who the champion's going to be coming out of it, what do you see playing out here?
I guess I'm going with Kelowna. That's the one I'm married to. But hey, I picked against Oshawa in the OHL final. That seemed to work out.
All right, we'll keep going.
Work out for them. I didn't even have to put a child in the hospital like Mr. Burns did.
Well, you know, I guess I'll stick with my bias and I'll pick the Jens over Kelowna in the final.
All right.
It's been a while for the Jennies, so we'll see how that goes. And no doubt we'll have you back on here at some point soon and you can rub it in my face if that's not the way that planned it.
Or vice versa.
Yeah, and don't worry, I have a long memory for that sort of thing. I like being right, so I remember it.
I've only made one great prediction ever in sports.
We're going to have to share
Super Bowl 25, the Elway Favre one.
Okay.
The Packers were like a 13-point favorite in that one over the Broncos. And I think I was starting the Queen's Journal student paper one day. They wanted a Super Bowl prediction. And they were like, well, you can take, someone's already taken Packers win. They're like, you can take Broncos win or Broncos cover the spread. And I was like, no, I'm like, the Broncos are going to win this game. And I really had my whole list of reasons. And I think I put for a score, I said 27 to 24. Well, late in that game, it was 24 all.
Oh, field goal away.
And the Broncos are just like, you know, chewing clock and handing off to Terrell L. Davis. And they're working down into scoring range. And someone's like, well, what score did you pick? And I'm like, I got 27-24. I was like, I was going to be on those. What happens? Mike Holmgren lost track of what down it was. Because I think there was the Broncos got in a goal to go situation. And then a holding penalty put them back on like the 18-yard line. Then Terrell Davis broke a big run down to the one because the Green Bay's defense was gassed, which is what I had predicted would happen because Reggie White was about, you know, the late great Reggie White was like 4 years old and not used to actually having to play every down.
Pretty much done.
And that's, I guess Holmgren thought it was first and goal and not second and goal. He's looking at the timeout, so we let them have the walkover touchdown. So it ended up, instead of letting, otherwise the Broncos just would have killed the clock and got their field goal, and I would have been right on the money.
Yeah. Pretty close, though, man.
Yeah, and that was, like they say, the first one AFC team had won, like, in 13 or 14 seasons, so kind of like the Eastern Conference drought in OHL.
Tough to bet against the streak, though.
So you had a plan to bring that back to junior hockey.
Wow. That was a pretty powerful segue. So, Buzzing the Net is the column we've talked about. The Oshawa piece is up right now. Anything else you want to plug, or you got going?
Oh, we'll have tournament coverage all through live. We've done a live chat at every Memorial Cup and every Team Canada World Junior game in North America since I guess the 2010 World Junior final. So we'll be doing that. Try to be on top of whatever's going on. There will be shenanigans. It's a Memorial Cup in Quebec City.
No doubt about that. So it's Nate Sager, Yahoo Canada, Buzzing the Net, the A-Game, all kinds of stuff. You can find him there to check it out. Until next time, have a good one.
Well, this one's empty. For more, visit tallcanaudio.com or find us on Twitter and Facebook at tallcanaudio.